Daf Nun Tes Amid Beis, and we're 8 lines up from the bottom. Tana Rabbanan. Hama'ane esager over b'shlosha lavim. Whereas inui in general is one lav, in the case of a ger there are 3 lav. Valochatzo, if a person presses a ger who owes him money to pay him, over b'shnayim, he violates 2 lav. So the Gemara asks, Maishno hama'ane, why is it in the case of inui, d'chsive shlosha lavim, there are 3 different lavim that you violate? The Gemara is going to try to figure out what these 3 lavim are. And this is the case of inui ager. Number 1, v'ger lo sone, right? The Torah says in Shmos Perkov Beis that you shall not oppress a ger. You shall not wrong a ger. Number 2, now we're fast forwarding to Parshas Kedoshim. V'chi yogur itcha ger v'yatzchem lo sonu oso. So that's a second lav of wronging a ger, of insulting a ger. And finally, a little bit weiter in Vayikra Chaf Hei, it says v'lo sonu ish es amiso, which is a general all-encompassing isur. And ger b'chal amiso hu. And ger is not excluded from the general isur amna. So the Gemara says, logically, if that be the case, then lochatzo nami shlosha ksiv. If a person presses a ger in order to have him pay up his chov, that also should come under 3 lavim. And why is that so? Number 1, in Shmos Chaf Beis it says, v'lo chsil chatzenu, right, you shall not press him. And then, in the same parasha, but a little bit later, it says, v'ger lo silchatz. And then finally it says, v'lo sielo kenoshe, which is a general isur that applies to everyone, in ger, b'chlalu. So when it says now, lo sielo kenoshe, we're not referring to ger specifically, but ger is therefore included. So again, what we're talking about is the fact that the love at this particular moment does not have the funds to pay up the chov, and the halacha is that the malve is enjoined from pressing the love for payment, and the ger should be included in the general isur lo sielo kinoshe. Ella. So therefore the Gemara changes the girsa here in this praisa. Echad zeh v'echad zeh b'shlosha. In both the case of ma'anis ager, in the case of locheitz, there are 3 laf. Tanya, Rabbi Eliezer, Agodol Omer, Mipnei Ma, His Hira Torah, b'shlosha v'shisha mekomos, v'amrile v'arboi v'shisha mekomos b'ger. Why is it that in 36 places, perhaps 46 places in the Torah, speaks about not anguishing, not offending a ger? And the Gemara and the Brice answers, Mipnei Shesuru Suro Ra. And what does that mean, Suro Ra? Literally, his Yetzahara is Rab Yoser. And that means that for some reason we see him as a person who still remembers his old ways. And therefore, he has exposed himself from the time period in which he was not Jewish to all sorts of yetzaharas and temptations. And he might, chas v'shalom, be schlepped along, be influenced to go back to his old ways. Hu olul b'neka lachzar l'giyuso, says the Rashba. And therefore we have to be very careful about our relationship with a ger. Sheet of Gupetzes goes through the whole list of 46, and the Sheet of Gupetzes quotes the Ravid that the 46 are referring to places where the Torah mentions not only Ger, but Ani, Almana, and Yasom, the 36, that's a smaller number, that's referring to places where the Torah mentions, singles out the Ger alone. Maidich Siv, the Gemara Darshan's a Pasuk in Shpos Chaf Beis, Ger, the Ger lo Sone velo Silchatzenu, ki Ger Mayisim be Eretz Mitzrayim. And why is the fact that we were Gerim in Eretz Mitzrayim, what does that mean? Is that a background or some sort of a cause that we shouldn't cause any pain or pressure the Ger? So Rabbi Nosson Omer, Sanya, we have a brisa of Rabbi Nosson, Mum Shebecha al Tomar Lechavercha. Which literally means that if you have a certain chisaron, a certain blemish and imperfection, don't mention it to your friends. In other words, if you say something embarrassing about your friend and you really have the same history, you know, you're also equally guilty of the same thing. Here in the case of strangers, you know, you're talking to the ger as a stranger, as an alien, and my friend, you yourself were a stranger in a ger. You also experienced a ger situation in Mitzrayim. V'hainu t'yamri inshi, and this is a common idiomatic phrase, diskif le zekifa b'dioske. If somebody has a kar of mishpacha that suffered a terrible death, and in this case he was hung by the kingdom, lo nema le lechavre zekif binse. He shouldn't say to his eved or to his son, please hang up this fish. Because anytime you use the word hanging, it somehow reminds him of this tragedy. And Rashi adds something here, that if somebody agrees to sell a certain amount of grain from a particular field, sorry, we'll get to that Rashi in just a minute. The Mishnah says, Ein ma'arvin peros beperos. In other words, if somebody ordered a certain volume of produce from the seller, all of that produce should come from one field, and the seller does not have legal rights, according to Halacha, to mix fruits from one field with fruit from another field. And the reason for this is because minastam, again, if we don't know it otherwise, then one is better than the other. And therefore, the person who buys it, he wants to know exactly what he's getting. So if he gets the fruits that are grown in that field, then the seller is not allowed to mix grains that came in from another field. That's what we saw in Rashi, even if both grains of produce are equally fresh. And that's what the Mishnah emphasizes now, afilu chadashim bechadashim. Even if we're talking about fresh grains that were produced in one field and fresh grains in another field, you're not allowed to mix them together. And now we turn to Daf Samach Amud Aleph. The Mishnah continues, V'ein tzarech lomer chadashim b'yishanim. And it goes without saying that if the seller has agreed to sell old produce, then he's not allowed to mix new produce with the old produce when he delivers the order. And the reason for that is because the old produce, when you make it into flour, right, you take the wheat and it's dried over the course of time, and then after a time period you grind it and make it into wheat. That flour is superior to flour that's made from fresh new wet grains of wheat. So therefore, to mix in new with the old, when the order was made for old, that you're not allowed to do. However, if you want to mix new, let's say, if the order was new and you want to mix in some old grains which are superior in terms of production of flour together with the new, adarabba, you're doing a favor for the buyer, and that's permissive. The emes amru, that's a halacha brura, clear halacha, b'yayin, in the case of selling wine, he tiruli arev koshe birach. You are permitted, meaning the seller, to mix strong wine, which is called chazak v'charif, together with weak wine, yayin chalash. In other words, even though the agreement and the order was made for softer wine, you're allowed to mix in stronger wine. B'pnei shu mashbicho, because this mixture of yayin kosher with yayin rach is going to improve the wine. The strong wine improves the mild wine. And since the agreement was made for mild wine, which in the language of the Mishnah is called rach, the seller is only improving the wine if he blends in the yayin kosher and the strong wine. Now, if somebody had ordered a certain volume of yayin kosher, of strong wine, then clearly the mocher would not be allowed to deliver him any sort of blend, any sort of mixture of yayin rach, because the yayin kosher is superior. Rosh says that the superior nature of yayin kosher is that yochol liskayim yoser. It gives it a certain sustenance. It can maintain itself for a longer period of time. He has a kasha here. Why is it that the Mishnah felt compelled to teach us this din in the case of Iruv, of mixing, blending yayin kosher with yayin rach? Is if the mocher is indeed adding, he's enhancing the wine on behalf of the buyer, then tova lo bracha. So why would I think otherwise? And the answer is that there was a havamin to say that maybe we should make a gzera, and we should just make a flat decree not to mix mild wine with hard wine that's kosher, because you never know in which direction he's going to mix it. If you allow him to mix hard wine with the soft wine, then ultimately he'll mix the soft wine with the hard wine. The Mishnah continues, Ein ma'arvin shimre yayin b'yayin. When you produce wine, there's a certain amount of sediments that float to the bottom. You're not allowed to, the seller is not allowed to add these sediments into the wine and make it as part of the volume that was ordered. So the volume now will be, let's say, 98.5% of wine, pure, unadulterated wine, and 1.5% of sediment. I will no say lo eshmarav. The mocher is allowed to mix in sediments into wine. And the Mishnah seems to contradict itself in the same sentence. The Gemara is going to explain that it all depends whether he's mixing in sediments from a different barrel of wine into this barrel, or its own local sediments that we'll get to Mitzvah in the sugya. Mishin esarif mayim biyeno. What about diluting wine? You know, the pure, unadulterated wine is very strong. Now he's adding a certain percentage ratio of water into the wine. Loyim karenu bechanus. He should not be selling this mixture of wine and water in a store, in a chanus. This is what we call retail. However, the Mishnah says, Elim kein hodio. If he notifies the buyer that it's diluted wine, then it's okay. But velo l'sagar, now we're talking about not retail but wholesale. You know, we're talking about merchants who sell en masse. He's not allowed to sell to merchants diluted wine, afal pisho dio, even though he tells the tagor that that's exactly what he's doing. She'eno el l'ramos bo. We have to suspect that the merchant, the tagor who's buying the wine, is going to cheat customers. He's going to pass this on as if it was undiluted wine without notifying the buyer that it's actually diluted wine. And what that means is that you, by selling this diluted wine to the tagor, are violating the iser of lifnei iver lo site michshol. You become almost an accomplice to the crime, knowing full well that the tagor is going to pass this on to his buyers, his customers, without notifying them that indeed this wine is diluted. Now, in the case, we're going to see the Gemara, Rav is going to have a situation in which he actually dilutes wine and gives it to the tagor. In that case, he was just backing out of the deal. And there, Rav says it was diluted to such an extent that the buyer would certainly know that it was diluted. But we're always afraid that maybe the buyer will be fooled, and therefore, afal pisho dio, she'eno el ramos bo, fine. Makom she'nagu, the Mishnah says, lahatil mayim b'yayin. There are some places where the accepted custom is to blend water into wine. Yatilu, and the seller therefore is allowed to do so. There's no chashash of honah here in this case, because all the strong wines were in that particular locale were diluted with water, and therefore the buyer is well aware of the fact that he's buying diluted wine. Hatagor notel mechamesh gronos v'nosein lisoch magura achas. Now the Mishnah again is addressing the case of a tagor, and as we said before, the literal translation of a tagor is a merchant. Again, he's selling wholesale, and he's taking grain from different sources. In the Lashon of Mishnah, from the grunos. The grunos are the places where they took the grains, they gathered it together, and they did whatever they had to do in order to prepare the grains for market. And this wholesaler is buying grains from different people, from different sources, different grunos. V'nosein l'toch megurachas, and he's allowed to combine them in one megura, one storehouse, and then sell it, even though it's a combination of so many different grains from different farmers. And this is during the threshing season. So now he's storing it in a silo, and then the buyers purchase from here, and they're getting from grains from different sources. So you're allowing, the Mishnah is allowing the tagor to mix grains from different fields. And that's strange, because we just said at the beginning of the Mishnah that when the buyer puts it in order, the seller has to grant him the produce from one particular field and not mix from two different fields. Why in the case of a tagor is it mutter? And apparently the reason for that is that it's well known to the buyers that this is standard practice. And Rashi says, Shakol Yodimbo Shalogodlo Bisadosov. Everyone knows that he's not a local farmer that's selling his own produce, and he's buying from many different farmers and selling them. Is Bideyodim Harbe Lokech. Everyone knows that he's buying and collecting from many different sources. And with that understanding that the grains are not uniform, they buy this mixture of grains. The Mishnah continues and says, fine. Here it says, Mechamesh Gitos,
V'nosein l'soch pitom echad u'bilvad shlo yimiskavein li'arif.
Okay, what are we talking about now? It seems we're going now to back to the discussion about yayin, because the word gitos means presses, right? That's the gat, is where they press the wine. So he's buying now from five different sources, this wholesaler, and he's putting them all into one pitom. Pitom is a cask, I guess you would say in English. And the Rambam writes in Pirush HaMishnayos that it's not pitom, but pitas. And Rambam says that's all chavis gedola, gigantic barrel. So he's collecting wine from different wine presses, and he is combining them all into one chavis gedola. And then the Mishnah says, "Ubilvad shlo yiskaven miskaven li'arev," which literally translates as he doesn't intend to mix them, which is a little bit strange because it would seem that he's putting them all together in one chav. So what does it mean he doesn't intend to mix them? So Rashi says, "Shlo yiskaven li'arev lahutzi kol." Liknos harov mimakom mishubach li arev bo mimakom acher shchenim svurim shekala peres may also makom. It's as if he deliberately fools the public, and he's buying from all these different sources, and he gives the public the impression that he's really buying the most superior level here. The best of the best, and he's sort of letting out the word that what he's selling is the meshubach, when in truth he's mixing in a low level, not the most superior. Now, it's interesting that the mefarshim here speak about peros. The Mishnah literally was talking about wine that was mixed together. But now, the Mefarshim say this is a general rule that applies to produce, to peros. So let's assume that most of what the tagar buys is from high quality produce. And he's already therefore established his reputation as the high end. But now he mixes in inferior quality produce into the whole mixture, and that's in order to deceive the customers, the buyers, as if to think that everything is the premium, is the high quality, when in truth he's mixed it all together. And all this comes under the Isur Onah to deceive the buyer. There's a comment here in the Rashash that when it says Ubilvad shlo yiskaven, lo hitiru lo li'arev kishe'en lo tzorech li'arev. He says that as a general rule, the Mishnah is opposed to mixing unless it's necessary, unless it's well known. He says, b'makom she'en maspik meguros shiyuchal liten peros mikol goren v'megur b'fneyatzmi tiru lo li'arev. And what he's pointing out is that there's a certain relationship to what the reality is, and if the situation is such that there's not enough to join all these pairs together from one particular, say, threshing floor or one particular goren, then if it's well known and there's no intention of deception, they looked aside and they allowed it. So again, the subject of our mission is really tarovas of different sorts. Under what situations is there onah in mekach u'memkar, under what not?
Ein ma'arif in Paris, the Paris as a general rule. Perhaps in the case of a tagor, we could be more lenient. People know and realize that he's taking his produce from different sources, unless he deliberately tries to present himself as the high end, the high premium produce, and he mixes in inferior quality of produce. All this comes under deception and onah. Tana Rabbanan, the Gemara quotes a brisa, Ein tzarich lomar chadoshos me'arba v'yishonos mishalosh. The Mishnah, the brisa says it's a din pashut, without question, that if you have produce that's new and it's sold at arba son besela, and you have yishonos, old produce that's sold mishalosh, which means it's more expensive, as we said, because it's dried out and very healthy, durable wheat. And those are called peres yishonim. They're sold at the same seller, will only bring you 3 sa'im. So the chadashos are less expensive. You get 4 sa'im for the same seller. It's pshita that ein ma'arvin, you cannot add and mix these new fruits, new produce, new grains that are worth less with peres yishonim that are worth more. Ela, the chiddush here, the brayse is afilu chadoshos mishalosh v'yishonos mi'arba ein ma'arvin. If let's say that the price of peres chadoshim is higher than the price of yishonos, so you can get for the same seller 4 sa'im of yishonos. And in this case, the seller agreed to provide, you know, the order was made by the buyer of for peros yishanim. And again, peros yishanim in this particular case are cheaper. Nevertheless, ein ma'arvin, you can't mix in the more expensive peros, the peros chadoshim. Why? Because the chadashim, although they're more expensive, they're not as good quality as the yishanim. As we said before, to convert them into flour, the chadashim are inferior. You'll ask me, says the price, so why are people paying more for the chadashos? No, for that seller, they're only getting 3 sa'im. B'nei sha'adam rotze liyashnam. That there are people out there amongst the population who would rather buy these new grains because they have a longer life, a longer shelf life, they last for a longer time, and they will let these grains get old, so to speak, at the whatever pace, during whatever period of time, until they finally use it or sell it. So in other words, this lokeach, this buyer, Eino rotze liyashnam. He says that this buyer, this particular kef, made an order for yishanim, even though again the price of chadashim is higher, because there is a segment of the population that tafka want to take their time by buying the chadashim and allowing the aging process to take place gradually under their supervision, and deciding when they want to convert the grains into flour. But nevertheless, this particular buyer, he ordered yishanim. And you might say, well, if he ordered yishanim, how much more so can we improve his order by adding chadashim? And the answer is no. He decided that he wants old grains. That's what he's interested in. And he's not interested in aging the grains. And therefore it would be an iser onah to mix in the new grain, right? Even though, despite the fact that the new grain has a higher market price. In the footnote here, he points out that the Rif has a different girsa in this brisa. Ein tzarich lomar chadoshes omdos mishalosh vishonos mi'arba, because mazmin mechadoshes dein ma'arvin, al afilu chadoshes mi'arba vishonos mi'gimel, because mazmin mechadoshes Ein ma'arvim b'nei sha'odom rotza liyashman. In other words, according to the Rif's Girsa, we're talking about a prohibition of mixing the old with the new, not just the new with the old. And the reason for that is isur peros yishonim b'chadosh lo rak im ha'chadoshim yikorim in ha'yishonim osu la'arev. So mixing in the old grain, if the new grain is more expensive, that's certainly prohibited. Elafilu hayishonim yikorim in ha'chadoshim, even if the old grain sells for a higher price, this was the exact opposite gears that we had, and therefore by selling him yishonim at the price of chadoshim, he's really doing him a great favor in monetary market terms. Mikomakom, nevertheless, also lasus came. Why? Halokeach rotze dafka chadoshim, because he's interested in aging the grain. So again, there are two different scenarios here, depending on your girsa, but basically it means that the way that the buyer ordered it, that reflects what his desire is, and he wants the older ones because he's not interested in aging new ones, or the opposite, he wants new ones because he wants to age them, as the Rif would have it. And either way, there's an Iser Onah. Now the Mishnah continues, and the Gemara quotes the Mishnah: "Be'emes amru be'yayin itiru la'arev kasha barach mipneishu mishmash bicho." Omar Rabbi Lazar ada amra. From the fact that the Mishnah opens up this particular ruling with the words "be'emes amru," that it means that in yayin they allowed him to mix the water into the wine. And the answer is Mibneshu Mashbicho. The Mishnah wants to emphasize that this is what we call a Tam Poshut. In other words, the logic here is compelling, and there's no room for questioning such an accepted logical rule. So that's what it means that I mentioned water and into wine. We're not ready for that yet, I'm sorry. That's coming down the line. Now we're talking about Yayin Kosher Barach. And the Yayin Kosher is superior in quality to the Rach. It's Mashbicho. And that's a Tam Poshut. And generally, whenever it says B'emes Omru, it means we're talking about a Halacha Brura. You know, a ruling that has no room for any question, for any doubts. And therefore, he makes it into a universal rule, Rabbi Lazar, and he says, "Kol b'emes amru." Anytime the Mishnah uses that term "b'emes amru," halacha he, meaning it's halacha brura. It's a clear-cut halacha that you cannot question. And he has here a Yerushalmi. Shalmi adds that Rabbi Elazar understood that anywhere you find in the Mishnah Bemes Amru, it's a halacha l'Moshe Misinai. Our Mishnah is not a case of halacha l'Moshe Misinai. And the Yerushalmi doesn't bring that statement of Rabbi Elazar that Bemes is halacha l'Moshe Misinai in our Mishnah. And the Maratz Chayos is medayik from that this halacha in our Mishnah is not a halacha l'Moshe Misinai, because this has to do with the svaros of minhagim in iske maso matan. That's not halacha l'moshe misinai. But rather what the Gemara means to say is that the logic here is compelling. It's hilchas medina ube'emes amru, and there's no way you can question it, but it's not halacha l'moshe misinai. Omar Rav Nachman ube'en hagitos shanu. When the Mishnah allows mixing the strong wine with the mild wine, that was said during the time when they, you know, that period of time during the year when they make the wine, they produce the wine, and all the wines together are tosasim, meaning they're all fermenting, they're all creating one uniform tam. That's during the time period called the gitos, you know, when they press the grapes, and they produce the wine. But Other times during the year, it's not a good idea to mix wine, whether it's mulled wine with strong wine, the other way around, and therefore the seller is not permitted to do so. So in other words, there's a process called fermentation. That's how they produce the wine. And before that process is completed, which is called the gitos, at that point, the stronger wine will improve the milder wine. And the flavor of the two wines, when they ferment together, is not in any way, there's no detriment here. The combined fermentation process produces a flavor which is unified, which is embellished. If the wines come from different strengths and they're blended after the wine production season, and each wine was fermented separately, independently, and it developed its own particular flavor, then blending will spoil the flavors of the wine. And if you take a look at Rashi, you'll see that Rashi gives us this presentation. He says, let me just read the Rashi. Ubein hagitos shanu demashbicho shetosus in ze im ze venasim tam echad, becomes one unified flavor. Aval yachar hagitos, after the production of the wine, when the fermentation took separately, v'kvar kolat kol echad recho v'tamo, he adds the aroma here to the tam, ein mashbicho el pogmo, by mixing and blending these two wines, each one with its own unique flavor, it's not something that's beneficial. And here we have to, you know, Baruch Hashem, here in the state of Israel, we do a lot of wine production here. The Golan is famous for its wine. You have to really go visit a factory up north and get a tour and understand all the insights of how this works. The Meiri writes that Eino Mashbiach El Lizman Muat, the Omna Vishas Mechira Yayin Mashbiach, Ulam Biyad Alokeh Chozer Ayayin Lekalkalo. It could be that there's some sort of a hashbacha, an improvement, but only on a temporary basis, and that process will be reversed. So even if at the time he sells it, he's Keilu telling the Lokeh that I added the stronger wine and that's good for you, but ultimately it's going to be Chozer Ayayin Lekalkulo. It's going to the process is going to be reversed. The Gemara asks, "Va'idna de koma arve shalo ben agitos." The Gemara says that in our time, the sellers will mix strong wine with mild wine way after the wine production season, the gitos. And how could they do so, the Mochrim, when Rav Nachman already told us that this Iruv, this mixture, is going to spoil the wine? It's going to be detrimental, and you're not letting them mix it. On Rav Papa, the yade v'komachle. It all depends upon the local custom. And in our time, the custom is, says Rav Papa, that people who are buying wine and giving their orders, they know up front that there's going to be a mixture of wines and they're not makpid. So there's an automatic built-in mechila, an assumption that he's mochil. And that's how the customer understands it. That's Rav Papa. Rav Acha, Berei the Rav Ika Omar, he explains that Mishnah, Hamani Rabbi Achahi, that our Mishnah, which indicates that the minig is to mix wines, even shalobagitos, even not at the time of the production, even though that's going to in some way be detrimental to the flavor of the wine, but this is all a reflection of Rabbi Abba, the Sanya, we learned in the Braisa, Rabbi Acha Matir. He permits the seller to mix different wines together and sell them as a blend. And he doesn't even have to notify the buyer. Why? Bidavar hanit'am. It means that what the general custom was, that the buyer himself will taste the wine before he agrees to the sale. And he will always be able to tell by tasting it whether it's a blended wine and whether he wants it or he doesn't want it. So therefore, now at time, the minig is to test and taste the wine before you purchase it, and therefore you're allowed to add and mix you know, yayin kosher with yayin rach, even after the wine production season, and assume that the buyer will decide for himself whether or not he likes the aroma, he likes the flavor, and he'll buy it. The Mishnah says, "Ein ma'arvin shimra yayin v'yayin aval nosin lo shmarav." So the Mishnah in the Sefer says that you're allowed to add the sediments, and you're selling wine together with the sediments that are mixed together. The Gemara says, "Va'amit reisha ein ma'arvin klali." Reishas gives the impression, "Ein ma'arvin shimra yayin v'yayin," that you're not allowed to mix sediments into wine. So how do we make any sense out of this Mishnah? V'chi tema, if you'll say that my nosein lo eshmarav dekamodiale, maybe it means in the sefer that if you notify the buyer that you've mixed in the sediments into the wine, that's okay. He's not being deceived. Whereas the reisha of the Mishnah says ein marvin klal. There, he's not notifying the buyer. Hamidik tani sefer loyim karenu bechanus elim kein modio. The sefer says that if he mixes water into the wine, then he's not allowed to sell that in the store unless he notifies the buyer that he's mixed water into the undiluted wine. V'lo l'tager, but in any event, you're not allowed to sell such diluted wine to a merchant, a wholesaler, afal pishmodim, even though he notifies him. And from the very fact that the Mishnah is now separating between cases where he was modia the kona, he notified the buyer, he doesn't michal deresh. Apparently, in the Mishnah, we're talking about a general unqualified rule, afal gav de lo modia le, even though he doesn't notify the kona that he's mixed in the sediments into the wine. Nevertheless, it's mutter. So the Gemara answers, "Om Rabbi Yehuda hachi ka'amar." This is what the Tanavat Mishnah intends to tell us. Ein ma'arvin shmarim shel emesh b'yayin shel yom. In other words, you can't mix in yesterday's shmarim with today's wine. V'lo shel yom b'yayin shel emesh, and you're not allowed to mix shmarim from one barrel into the yayin that comes in another barrel. So the assumption here is that sediments from one barrel, if they're added to wine from another barrel, will be detrimental. Afal nosein lo eshmarav, but the mocher is allowed to give the buyer shmarim, the sediments that were left in the bottom of this chavis that he's selling to him. And that's not a problem. So in other words, when the mocher pours out the wine, he's allowed to pour out the wine together with the shmarim that are in, let's say, the bottom of the chavis. And all this wine he pours into the utensils, the receptacle of the buyer. The Meiri adds that this din is not referring to shmarim gmurim, the total sediment. Zev vaday osu l'mochel l'mkar b'chezkas yayin. In other words, the sediments don't have that much of a profound impact on the wine to make it undrinkable. And in those cases, he's allowed to leave the local shmarim in the barrel as he pours from the barrel into the receptacle of the lokeach. And we learned this in a price as well. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Hashofe Yayin Lechavera Harezalo Ya'arev Shal Emesh B'Yayin Shal Hayom V'lo Shal Hayom B'Shal Emesh Avol Ma'arev Shal Emesh B'Shal Emesh Shal Hayom B'Shal Hayom. Now we get up to the story of Rava. The Mishnah says, Mishnah Nesarev Mayim B'Yeno Harezalo Yim Karenu B'Chanus Elim Kein Modio. However, to sell it to a tagger, you're not allowed to because it's blended with water and hilful. His custom is Rava, Aisule Chamra Michanusa. It was Rava's minog that when they brought him wine from the store, Mazge Vitaime, he would mix water into the undiluted wine and then he would taste it to see if he wanted to buy it. The Lohavi Basim. In this particular occasion, it was not Mishubach. He didn't want it. Shadri lechanusa. So he sent it back to the wholesaler. Amalei Abaye. Abai said to him, wait a minute, what about Lifnei Ivel Osite Nitsho Anan Tnan Velola Tagar? We're afraid to supply the Tagar with diluted wine because he'll pawn it off, he'll sell it off to the buyer without notifying him that it's diluted. Afal Pisho Dio, even if you notify the Tagar, we're still afraid that the buyer will not know, he'll be deceived. And that's Lifnei Ivel. So then how could it be, Rava, that you went ahead and sent back to this Tagar this diluted wine after you yourself personally diluted it? Amale, Rava said to Abaye, Mizga Didei Mediyade. In other words, I add quite a bit of water. You know, the ratio of water that I add to the wine is significant enough that anybody could tell and discern that this is diluted water. The seller will not be able to fool, deceive the buyer, because the buyer will obviously know that he's getting diluted wine, and therefore there's no chashash of ona. So Rava said, v'chitemen, if you'll argue there's still a chashash of ona, ditfei umechayle umazvinle, maybe the seller, the tagar, is going to add even, you know, even Yosef Chavoni Yain Chai V'Yechazikos Es Yain Amozik Ad She Ha'erev Lo Yenik. I don't know, he'll do something very smart over here to trick and deceive. He'll add more strong undiluted wine so that the buyer will not be able to discern that this is diluted wine. You know, it's by upping the ratio, the percentage of Yain Chai, the buyer will be fooled. And he's going to be selling him at a higher price as if it's, you know, strong, undiluted wine, when in fact, in truth, it's diluted him. Kain, Eilu Dover Sof. Rava says, if we're going to be choshish that far, then there's no end to it. You know, maybe you shouldn't even be allowed to sell water to a chenvani, a tagar, because he's going to take the water and mix it into wine. Obviously, you know, there's no end to rabos, to deception. And therefore, just don't sell something to a tagar that in and of itself, in its present state, it could be used to fool and deceive the buyers. That's the rule of thumb over here. Then the Mishnah says, Mokum shenogu lahatil mayim v'yayin yatilu. If it's known that we mix and blend water with wine, that's okay. Tana, the Brisa says, lemechtzel shlish u'l'reviyah. In other words, it all depends upon what the minig is, what ratio and proportion of water they add to the wine. In some cases, they add as much as 50%. In some, 33 1/3%, 25%. Amar Rav, ubein hagitos shanu. Then once again, this heter, allowing you to mix water with wine, is only during the time of the wine production. Sha'az, at that time, nogu kulam, it was absolutely universally accepted custom that they mix water with wine. But after that time period, you're not allowed to add and mix the water with the wine, because after that very short period of time, after adding the water, and after a short period of time of doing that blending, it starts ruining the wine. Now, it's wine, as it's undiluted, has a longer shelf life, as we said before. The buyer is not going to know at what point in time the water was mixed in. He may think that his wine is going to last much longer than in truth it really will, because the water was mixed in at an earlier date. So that, as a general rule, says Rav, we should be selling undiluted wine. That's got the long-lasting punch to it. But if it's during the period of the gitos, of the wine production, that's when the law, the halacha, is more lenient, allowing this mixture to take place during the wine production season. Mishnah is now the new Mishnah, and we'll make a siyum in Mirtz Hashem on the Perek. Maybe not today, but tomorrow, is going to address the issue of various practices and monopolies, and whether or not these practices that merchants implement will somehow undermine other merchants, and it's unfair business practices and unfair competition. And Ritz Hashem will pick that up as the subject of the next Mishnah.